I'm going to call this meeting to order. Palm Beach County Transportation Disadvantaged World Coordinating Board, LCB. This is Thursday, December 8th, 2017, 10 a.m. I'm Robert Weinroth. I'm the new chair of the committee, and I'll just introduce myself very quickly. I'm a member of the City Council of the City of Boca Raton. I'm also a member of the Palm Trans Service Board, and I'm also a member of the Palm Beach MPO. So I have a lot of interest in transportation, and I'm very excited to have been appointed by the MGO to be your new chair. I know Melissa McKinley has had a lot of conflicts. In fact, right now she's up in Tallahassee at Palm Beach County Days lobbying our legislators. So I'm very pleased to have received this appointment, and I'm very excited to be working with you. So we're going to, I'm going to ask very quickly, go off the agenda for a second. I'm going to ask everybody to introduce themselves, more for me than for you, just so that we know everybody sitting here. And of course, I've introduced myself, so can we go round the table?
Okay, well, happy to have you here. My name is Tomas Boyton. I started Citizens for Improved Transit. I've been designing transportation programs for the last 10 years with over $7 million in federal, state, and foundation funding.
Thank you.
There
we go.
I'm Annie Delgado, and I'm a planner at the Palm Beach Metropolitan Planning Organization.
My name is Margarita Cortez. I'm the administrative secretary for the Palm Beach MPO.
My name is Marie Doisman. I represent FDOT. I'm the manager for the 5310 program.
And I'm David Rafaitis with Palm Beach County Department of Community Services.
Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, I'm Sharon Green with the Florida Department of Health.
And good morning, I'm Clay Walker. I'm the Circuit Administrator for the Department of Children and Families here in Palm Beach County. Mike, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself? Oh.
Mike Nagelberg. I'm a representative of veterans. I'm also a user, slightly handicapped with being absolutely blind.
Thank you, Mike.
Good morning, Lou Ferry for Palm Train Connection Operations Manager.
Good morning, Keith Plainfield, Performance Management Manager for Palm Train.
Thank you. Okay, I also would like to thank you, Tom, for taking over. I see for the last bit you've been acting as chair, and I thank you so much for keeping the committee rolling. All right, do we need an attendance just to make sure we have a quorum? Could you do that, please?
Robert Weinroth.
Here.
Tomas Boyton.
Present.
David Evans. Sharon Green.
Here.
Marie Dorsman.
Here.
Maria Hernandez is excused. Dina Hill is excused. Elizabeth Lodovice. Mike Nagelberg.
Yo.
David Rafaitis.
Present.
Shane Searchwell. Bobby Valentine. Clay Walker.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Dave Evans is downstairs. Saw him enter the bathroom. I don't know. Do you want to help him come up, maybe?
What's upstairs?
Yes. Just make sure. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out. We'll proceed and he'll catch up. I'm going to ask if anybody will make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Motion.
Motion to. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor of adopting the agenda for March 8th, 2017, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have a motion to accept. All right. Now we're going to take a look at the minutes from the last meeting, which I was not here for. So I'll look for a motion to approve the minutes for December 8th, 2016. Do I see a motion?
A motion to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Against? Okay, the motion carries. All right. Next item of business, of course, is the comments of the chair, and I think I've already taken my time for that. And so we'll move right on to general comments. I have one card here. Of course, everybody is entitled to speak, so I will take the first person who has put a card in. And Stanley, I see you are the person. There you are. Where is the microphone for the public? Okay. And can I ask, what do we allow for public comment? 3 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right, Stanley, you're up.
Yeah, my comments would be after any agenda items, not just extraneous from the top.
Okay, Stanley, then we'll come back to you at a point when you see something, an action item you want to speak on. Thank you. Anybody else would like to speak from the public? Seeing nobody, we'll close that item. And we'll move on to item 2, action items. And I'm going to ask Tom Tran to make a presentation on the community transportation coordinator.
Okay. Andy, is this for you or is it for us?
Just putting on the
Okay.
Well, MPO or Tom Tran, what wants to take it?
I think MPO is going to be taking this to the CTD. Do you want to do it?
Sure. So what I placed on the screen is the letter of interest from Palm Tran to the MPO, and that's really the kickoff to the process of redesignating them as the CTC. And at our last meeting, we did discuss that we wanted to move forward and recommend that they rename the CTC, so that process has started. So they did submit their letter of interest to the MPO, and on March 14th, they'll be taking it to the Board of County Commissioners to get it approved on their agenda as well. So I have no further comments, and we're happy to have Palm Tran be the CTC again for the next 5 years. It's a 5-year process.
All right. Does everybody understand what all that means? Just
acronyms
and all that?
I was going to ask for an explanation.
So CTC is the Community Transportation Coordinator. Each county or area has a CTC. So the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage designates a CTC in each county. For this county, in Palm Beach County, the CTC has been the Board of County Commissioners, but it has actually been Palm Tran or Palm Tran Connection through the Board of County Commissioners since about 1999-2000. Okay, before that, it was actually the MPO. So each, every 5 years, we have to sign a memorandum of agreement with the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage for that 5-year period to be the CTC. Now, here in Palm Beach County, obviously, we talk about transportation a lot. We have a lot of boards that talk about transportation. We have a lot of people interested in transportation. In some counties, the LCB, which is the board that we're conducting right now, the meeting we're conducting right now, is the only board that talks about transportation, or they don't have fixed route, they only have TD. So it's very important for that board because they don't talk about it. So here we're lucky in that we're very active with the public, we're active with our advocates, we're active with the Palm Tran Service Board we have. We have the Palm Tran Service Board Power Transit Subcommittee, we have the Planning Subcommittee, so we have a lot going on with transportation, which is good. So Palm Tran, of course, with the Board of County Commissioners, would, of course, like to continue as a CTC. It brings in around a $3 million grant from the TD Trust Fund. If I'm using too many acronyms, just stop me and I will stop. But the Transportation Disadvantage Trust Fund. So the Trust Fund is about $60 million. Now, there's a TD Trust Fund up in Tallahassee that is used for all 67 counties. 47 counties? 67 counties? 67 counties. So that is divvied up between all the different CTCs. So Miami-Dade obviously gets the largest amount. And we're pretty much at the top, other than us and Broward and Orlando gets, you know, Orange County. They're three different counties together. But that pretty much sums it up. That's what the CTC is. We coordinate the transportation here in Palm Beach County.
Great. Thank you so much. And let the record indicate that the Executive Director Forbes has just arrived. And I see, Mr. Forbes, you have a letter in our package indicating that Palm Tran would like to continue the CTC. Do you have any further comments in addition to your letter?
No, I've just asked that you support it.
Okay. Do I have any comments from the board?
Yes, David. After this is approved by the BCC, can we get like an organizational type of chart as far as how this all kind of fits together? Because I liked your summary to it, but to visually see it, and then maybe later on, I'm not saying need it right now, but I can see how that the money situation has evolved. So what money is coming from which organization through what and how it specifically affects us. It just, nothing detailed, just kind of like a little bit there.
Well, let me just say that we're going to give you something very detailed. We just completed a white paper on this program, and it's really comprehensive. It's our start to, it's our beginning to really begin to educate the board members, the board of county commissioners on, you know, what this program is about, to get some historical information. MPO took a look at it and reviewed it, and we're going to be releasing that very soon. And that will, it's very comprehensive, and it should be very enlightening.
Well, I guess we're on the same track.
Yeah. Lou.
The only thing I wanted to add was, in that white paper, we do have a flow chart as to where the Commission for Transportation Defenders goes on, and where the CTC, the MPO, where everyone fits in that model. And as Mr. Forbes said, we'll have more of a trail as to where the money goes, trust fund to us, and the match that we have, and where that goes. So.
Can I ask to have that disseminated before the next meeting?
I think that is possible.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else from the board will have want to speak on this item? Anybody from the public want to speak on this item? Seeing nobody, do I have a motion to recommend that the Palmtran remains a community transportation coordinator?
Motion.
Motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further comment about this item? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Against? Okay, motion carries unanimously. And go on to item two, motion to approve the fiscal year 2018 rates. And annually, the CTC must submit rates for the upcoming fiscal year in order to receive the trip and equipment grant. And we have been we've received a trip worksheet for the fiscal year 2018. Do I have a presentation on this?
There's no presentation. I can just answer any questions if anybody.
Okay. Does anybody from the board have any questions on this? Is item 2B in your package? There's a service rate form where it's showing the trips for ambulatory $30.81, wheelchairs $52.82, bus pass daily $3.50, monthly $50, and monthly reduced is $40.
And I can just explain, these rates are formula driven. We complete this rate model every year, and it's compiled with our comprehensive budget here, the paratransit budget, along with our projected miles and trips for the upcoming year.
How does this compare with last year?
It's within the same, a couple cents off.
Okay.
So there was no dramatic change.
Okay.
Or no drastic change, excuse me.
Do I see any comments from the board? Yes.
One question that we've had in years past, and I never got a full answer for it, and just more wanting to know, when we do the rate model, does it take the entire Palmtran expenses, everything, building, administration, and then divide it by the amount of trips, or is it a certain percentage of, or certain expenses that Palmtran takes on divided by the amount
it's
of trips?
It's all of connections operating expenses.
Okay.
So it doesn't include, how can I say, it's all of provider costs and then all of our normal operating expenses, so salaries and everything included, but just connection.
Okay.
Does that answer?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Any other comments? Do we have any comments from the public? Stanley?
I just wanted to
let's
know.
Let's get you a microphone. We'll get a microphone.
The rates shown.
Hold on, Stanley.
I'm interested in knowing if the rates shown are the same, low, or higher than this present year.
The rates for the current year are 30.88, so it's all like 7 cents. It's all within cents on the difference.
I couldn't hear what
she said. That the rates have changed by a couple of pennies. There's been a very
all
very,
of the rates.
Yes.
Yes.
A couple of pennies.
Any other comments, Stanley?
No, it's.
Thank you. Okay. Any other comments from the public? Seeing none, I'm going to look for a motion to approve the fiscal year 2018 trip rates. Do I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second.
Second. Very good. All in favor of the motion to approve, say aye.
Aye.
Against? Okay. Passes unanimously. Excellent. All right. We're on to information items. Number three, staff updates.
Good morning, everyone. So again, I'm Annie from the MPO. Are we all awake?
Yeah. I know it's a little convincing outside, but all right, let's get going. So I'm going to give you a staff update of what's been going on at the MPO, as well as in our region. So if you don't mind, let's get it right into it. So with every meeting, I like to highlight our duties and where we are in that spectrum of things that the LCB does. I'll highlight some initiatives from the MPO, like our bike suitability maps, which I have here, and they're in the back for you to take with you to your desk or home or to wherever you'd like. We've also done a pedestrian and bicycle safety study, and we're kicking off a US 1 multimodal corridor study, and I think the LCB does have some nice places that they can fit in that, as well as I'll highlight the South Florida Household Travel Survey, and then where we are in our current fiscal year in the timeline. So like I said, with our duties, so we do have a wide spectrum of what we do, and I'd like to highlight that in this current portion of the fiscal year, we'll be highlighting especially the TDSP, which is the Transportation Disadvantaged Service Plan, as well as our CTC evaluation. So we just heard that acronym, Community Transportation Coordinator Evaluation. So the LCB does undergo an evaluation process, and we're starting both of those now, and then we'll conclude both of them come June at our next meeting. And we've also done the review portion, which was those trip rates that Rosanna just explained to us and that were approved. So the CTC evaluation, so annually, this is an annual process, and all of the CTCs in the state are getting reviewed by their local coordinating board or whatever agency reviews them. And it comes down to a workbook that the state provides. So everyone is providing the same workbook back to the state with their findings. And what we'll do is we'll complete it, and I ask that everyone help survey the riders of the system, and I'll have that for you in the next week or so. The purchasers of the service and the contractors. So like I said, this is from now until June, and your main way that you can help is, of course, reviewing the workbook and helping to fill it out and then surveying those riders. And in that survey, we ask you to make at least 20 phone calls, and that's between now and really the end of May, so you have plenty of time to do so. And it's a pretty short survey. And what we ask are really basic things. So when did you last receive the service? So they might say, okay, it was last week. And you ask them a series of questions. Were you charged anything else? If so, how much? How often do you take the transportation? A lot of them say, okay, I take it daily or I take it every other day to work. What did you use it for? And how was your trip? And at this point, they can really give you any information they like. They can say, well, my driver was really great, or actually, I had this issue. And it's just a way to candidly capture information from riders. So it's completely random. And if they don't respond, it's okay. Just move on to the next caller. But all you do is you fill out the form and then you email it back to us. So that's the call portion. And then we also ask, I'm going to pass out a sign-up sheet in a moment. So we ask that if anyone would like to take rides on Connection, they're welcome to do so. I'm going to do it. Perhaps Mike or anyone else, if they'd like to take a ride as well or just observe their trip as they're taking a normal ride on Connection, that would be great. There's a form that goes with that. And like I said, reviewing the workbook for errors and any general feedback to make it better is what we're asking you to do. So now with the TDSP minor update, this service plan covers our entire county, and it's really a snapshot of what types of services we offer for transportation disadvantaged people. And what we do is a minor update. The next major update is fiscal year 18. So in this one, it's very small. We're updating only three sections of the document, but still, it's a very long document, so we ask you to review it for errors, provide feedback, how can we make it better moving forward. And I'll send you all of that information. And again, that will conclude in June at our next meeting, and then we'll go through the approval process. So the bike suitability maps. The MPO has endeavored on making these awesome maps. And why does it relate to LCB or TD? It's because, sure, it's a bicycle suitability map, but it's really telling us where people are most comfortable on our roadways. So it doesn't matter if you're a pedestrian, a cyclist, if you're in a wheelchair, you're on crutches, you're a child. This is a good snapshot, a good indication of the quality of our roadways when it comes to how comfortable you might feel. So it does take into account width of the roadway, width of the adjacent sidewalk, the speed of the cars, the volume of cars. So all of those things come into play when making this map. So like I said, they're in the back, and you're welcome to take them back to your organizations, or if you like a local bike shop, leave them there. we have them for you, and we can always give you more if you so desire. So the next thing the MPO has done, we just completed our pedestrian and bicycle safety study. So what I'd like to highlight to you is a snapshot of our pedestrian injuries and fatalities. So looking at the United States, per million, we'll go with that number. So per million people, the rate is about 14.98, so about 15 fatalities per million people. Okay, it doesn't seem like a lot. Fine, I give you that, but any fatality we don't like. In Florida, though, it's 30.47, so Florida does much worse than the United States. However, in Palm Beach County, okay, I give you that, we're at 25.5, so we're doing less, but what's really important is that in the total percentage of fatalities, so in all of the injuries, the crashes, we're the highest. 27% of all of those crashes resulted in a fatality. For Florida, it's 24, and for the U.S., it's 14.5, so we have a lot of work to do, a lot to overcome to help bring that number down, but our study did show that. And we looked at data between 2010 and 2014, so it's 5 years, and it's all-encompassing. It's the most complete data set that we were able to access. And unfortunately, we are on the rise. The trend shows that we're rising in our pedestrian fatalities by year. So this study looks at that data and offers countermeasures. So what can we do to help alleviate some of those crashes and reduce those fatalities?
Could that be just because we bike in Palm Beach County a lot more than in other counties? So in some ways it's a positive thing, because it's saying pedestrians, but if pedestrians include bicyclists, I know we bicycle a lot more here than a lot of other places.
So to answer your question, this is just for pedestrians. There is a separate one for bicyclists. And actually on the next page, I do highlight the maps. So this is just pedestrians. And again, what you say is valid because it is based on count. So we do have more, a higher population in Palm Beach County compared to other counties in our state. So what you do make a valid point. So perhaps moving forward, we can do a rate model, the rate of accidents as opposed to the count, and it might change. But still, it's upward trend, which is not good. We have to try and reverse that. So this is a hot heat map of both pedestrian and bicyclist crashes in Palm Beach County. So for those of you who can't see, there's a huge cluster of red. The spectrum goes from green to yellow to orange to red. And where it's red and orange, you have the most concentrated areas of crash rates. So certainly in our mostly densely more populated areas, but you can essentially draw a line from Okeechobee Boulevard down to Lantana Road, and from Military down to, or east to the coast. It's really heavily concentrated there. And also in Delray Beach, in the downtown area, a little bit in Boca in the downtown area. But what the red areas show for pedestrians in particular is that it's 5 to 7 more times greater crash density than the green areas. So 5 to 7 times higher there, and for bicyclists it's 6 to 8 times higher there as far as crash density goes. So these, what we've done is showcase what areas we need to focus on when it comes to really targeting those areas for bike and ped safety.
Wait, before you go on,
yeah?
The last one, is there any relationship to where our buses are and people putting the bikes on the buses to where the crashes are occurring?
That's a good point. Perhaps if maybe someone from Function wants to answer, or we can get that information to you, and I can look in the study and see what it says regarding bus stops and the location. But that's a good point.
One other point to make here, and as I said, I'm on the MPO also. One of the things the MPO is looking at right now is creating complete streets, complete safe streets, to create a walkability area. We're trying to take the emphasis away from the motor vehicle and start driving the pedestrian traffic, the bicycle traffic, but to do that, obviously, it's got to be safer. So a lot of the mission of the MPO right now is not just to widen streets, but to look at those streets and figure out if there are opportunities to make wider vistas for people to bike, to walk, and not necessarily just add on more lanes for motor vehicles. So I think you're going to see this being addressed at different levels. The MPO, obviously PalmTran, is looking at it in their own situations with air accidents, not having to do with pedestrians, but everybody's looking at trying to push these accidents down. And to your comment before, I think that we have, of course, people who are on the streets because we are a benefit of great weather here, so more people are on the roads versus up north where, you know, they're having blizzards, and we also have an older population here. So the two make it a little bit more prevalent for accidents, but anything we can do to drive these numbers down, and obviously these fatalities, whether it's one or whether it's 35, it's too many, and we're going to be looking at this on all levels. David?
Yeah, I have one comment. I'm glad you mentioned that because I was looking to see how we really drill down the numbers, because are the accidents because of our professional bike riders and the areas that they're in, or is this leisure type of biking, or is it because of ethnicity and income areas, or is it cultural or something like that? And then that's where I was tying it into perhaps the bus routes or our transportation system that, once again, I don't need it right now, but as long as we're leading into that direction, that's fine.
Very good. Mr. Nagelberg?
I believe one of the problems is with the elder people here is the type of control that should be eliminated and not tested at all. Namely, they test the vision over a certain age, and they test it, but vision is not what counts. It's reaction time. And I think a lot of the accidents can be avoided by removing people from driving who have good sight but cannot react in adequate time. And I speak from experience because during World War II, in the 5th Service Command, the commanding general was faced with a similar problem of high accident rates, and they undertook a series of exams to see if they could eliminate the cause. And one of the tests was to have both feet on the ground before a green light. The green light would then flash to red, and they would measure the reaction time till the foot came off the floor and hit the brake. And by eliminating a lot of people with slow reaction time, and they didn't have that many among the older people there, but they had a very productive reduction in the amount of accidents. And that should be looked into. Politically, it hurt when they said they were going to test the eyesight, but this is even more important, testing reaction time, and I never hear it brought up.
Your point is well taken, and certainly I think we have to make every attempt to have alternates, so people who feel that they need the independence of riding in a motor vehicle have alternates so that they don't feel the need to be out in a private passenger vehicle. So I think that there's a lot to be said for offering alternatives and also to look at the skill set of our older drivers without taking away from them the freedom that they are looking for in having a motor vehicle. So thank you very much, Mr. Engelberg. Any other comments from the board?
Wonderful.
We'll take the public comment in a moment.
Actually, he's part of the board. Dave's part of the board.
Oh, he is? I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
All right. My name is David Evans, for the record. And Mike is very correct. We really do not make the tests that strings enough. I'm a perfect example of that. I got my first license here in the state of Florida in 1965. I drove here. I got a license in California in 68. I drove there. I came back to Florida in 79. Got a license again. Now, this whole 20-year period, I was already legally blind.
Wow.
I didn't know it. And I just learned how to adapt. I I followed other cars. I paced other cars. I didn't really give up driving until I couldn't see the lights far enough down the street to know whether to proceed or stop. And I was pacing other cars. That's not a good strategy to have around here. Not as often as we have people that run the stop signs and the red lights and everything. I got away with it for 20 years before it caught up to me.
Your point is very well taken, obviously. I think we, politically, I think we all have to understand that we have a very strong advocacy group for the older residents here, and anytime the legislature has tried to institute any sort of examination of driving abilities for our older drivers, it has resistance, very, very stiff resistance. But certainly your comment, Evans, really brings this to light. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so with this nice slide, what we've done, and I want to piggyback off of what David was asking, are these accidents mostly recreational, or are these people getting to and from work? Is it in ethnic areas or low-income areas? So what we found, and I'm going to hold up my bike map, is that regardless of suitability, really, recreational cyclists are on A1A, very long stretches of road, and we found that using Strava data, so Strava is an app that you can track your miles, whether you're biking, running, etc. Most of them are on those facilities where we're expecting to see those guys in the spandex and on those really quick road bikes. So when it comes to these accidents, these high crash corridors especially, and I'm going to highlight our highest intersection off the bat is Military Trail at Forest Hill Boulevard. And we were actually there yesterday doing an outreach study in the intersection talking to pedestrians. Why didn't you use the crosswalk? You were right there. What happened? Do you know that you need bike lights on your bike at dawn, dusk, or night? All of these issues, because it is our biggest location. It's our largest hotspot. And in that area, definitely higher Hispanic population, not many English speakers, and they're just not familiar with the rules of the road or the law. So we tried to get out there and talk to some people and understand what was really going on. So you'll see in that entire area, definitely a hotspot is there, and the entire corridor, really, because the highest corridor is Military Trail in that entire section of the county. So we're trying to focus our attention at those areas that definitely require it, and having people who speak Spanish or Creole, etc., in those areas is extremely helpful, because we do find that they're mostly lower income. But then on the flip side, we do find places like downtown Delray. There's just way more pedestrian and bicycle activity. So the crashes are higher there because there's just more people present. So it can really go both ways. And we're trying to find ways to mitigate all of those situations.
Well, just because you brought it up, I'm glad about the educational portion of it, but then there's the enforcement. So what is the Sheriff's Department or law enforcement doing with this? Because if people are doing things incorrectly, though I never speed, there may be law enforcement that would remind me not to do that because of signage or that they're a parked vehicle or they actually issue a citation. So I'm glad that we have people on the street doing that, but then that kind of puts you in an awkward position too of, someone might get upset with you.
So we have had events where it's just us, but in yesterday's case, we did have Palm Beach Sheriff and Palm Springs Police Department out there with us, which was a blessing and a curse, because some people said, okay, the officers are out here. They weren't giving tickets, but they were speaking to people. But some people were actually avoiding the intersection because they saw law enforcement there. So it can go both ways. So we do try and partner with them. And I believe they have a safety campaign going on as well, especially with FDOT, Florida Department of Transportation, their Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow program. They work very heavily with law enforcement when they do their campaigns too. And sometimes they write tickets, and other times they don't. It's just a conversation or a warning. So it's up to them. All right, and our final big initiative at the MPO is our US-1 multimodal corridor study. So we're looking at US 1, 42 miles approximately from 14 communities, all the way from Boca Raton to the south and Jupiter up north. So we're trying to get really a collective vision for the corridor. How can we get enhanced transit, safer bike path facilities, active transportation, getting the locals to buy in on the plan? It's really trying to find a collective vision for this entire corridor, because it's really our, one of our longest stretches of road in Palm Beach County, in the United States, really. And where the LCV and TD comes in is that we're doing a health impact assessment. So I really encourage anyone who thinks they might be a good suit for this to jump on board, and we're going to have a steering committee for this effort. So what a health impact assessment does is it's looking at not just access to healthy foods, to jobs, to goods, but really mobility, economic development, crash data, quality of life. It's really all of these pieces that make a place great. So we're going to have our steering committee. We haven't had a meeting yet. We're still getting people on board, and I know Sharon is going to be part of the group because the Department of Health is going to be such a big key player in that. So please, if anyone is interested, they can let me know, or I'll send out an email later on with the information. So the timeline is as follows. Right now we're just doing research, but it'll conclude next spring in 2018. And really, the public outreach portion is going to be the biggest, and that's from summer to fall of this year. We're kicking off May 6th in Boca Raton, and we'll be out there with information and just getting people excited about the study, and then we'll be conducting stakeholder interviews through October with all of the communities that we hit along the way. And finally, I'd like to highlight the CEFTEC, which is the Southeast Florida Regional, or Southeast Florida Transportation, what's the C, Melissa?
Council,
thank you. Yes. Council, they're doing a travel survey. So at first this was targeted in your mailbox, but people weren't responding. So now it's a regional challenge against all three counties, so Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. Whoever can get the most surveys, they'll win. So now it's exciting and there's competition involved. So what we'd like to do is invite you all to participate in the survey, and I have the link here, but it'll also be in the email that I send out, and it's ceftectravelsurvey.org. And Melissa, if you want
to... Annie, that probably takes you to the same site, but the site that we're promoting is FL for Florida, FL Travel Challenge.
There it is.
Rather than the word survey, which can be a turnoff, and also when you see it on a billboard or something, it's a lot shorter. So FL Travel Challenge, and there's a link right from our MPO homepage, homebeachmpo.org.
Right, so please take the survey, or excuse me, take the challenge, and help Palm Beach County win. And,
can you send us the link?
Yes.
Email it to us, and then I know I'll do it that way, but
okay.
I'm getting two different.
Right. I'll send Melissa's easier link to all of you. And then planners, myself and engineers, will be able to use this information to help improve the system in our county. All right, so in our timeline, we're currently in our March meeting. Our final meeting of the fiscal year is June, and we're having that on June 14th. And that's where we'll wrap up everything that we've discussed this past fiscal year, get our TDSP approved, the CTC eval, and then have our final meeting and close it out. So with that, if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to take them. Well, there's so much good discussion during this presentation, so...
Thank you very much for that presentation. One of the interesting things about CEFTEC is, you know, transportation is regional. So, you know, you have the Palm Beach MPO, you got the Broward MPO, you got the Miami-Dade MPO, but this is a way for them all to basically work in collaboration. And in fact, there's a move put up on the federal level to merge all three of those together. The MPOs are fighting that because we all see that we have differences between the three counties, and obviously the Palm Beach MPO is concerned that we would lose out in funding as opposed to the more heavily traveled areas of Miami-Dade and Broward. But, you know, again, transportation is regional, and CEFTEC offers us that opportunity to have regional solutions to our travel. That was a great conversation. Thank you very much for that presentation. Okay, now we're going to move up to the next item, which is the CTC update. And we'll look for Tom Tran to give us a response to the CTC evaluation overview.
Mm-hmm.
Lou, you seem to have gotten the short straw.
Depends on how you look at it.
In the next meeting, can I ask if you can have both of the monitors working so that it's easier for people to see the presentations? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, as Annie alluded to, the CTC review, which we will be starting soon, I guess, after this meeting, we wanted to follow up on last year's findings. So, the general questions from last time, one of the findings was the CTC clients can submit complaints via telephone, social media, or mail. And also, clients can also communicate concerns directly to the CTD, which is the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage, if still not satisfied. So the recommendation was consider an online form available on the CTC website for submitting complaints. And then the next one was follow up on all complaints via telephone, email, or letter where applicable. So the status of those. The first one, this will be available as part of our online scheduling website, which is called PassWeb. We are very close to getting into the testing phase with the focus group. Probably within next week, possibly, we will get like 5 to 10 users of the system to use the PassWeb. And on that PassWeb, there's actually a button for feedback. So they can press the feedback button, and they can either give us accommodations, complaints, or they can let us know their eligibility is expiring. You know, can you check my eligibility? And it'll send an email. Right now, I've drawn the short straw on that, too. It'll send an email to me. So. But no, it'll, and we promise to get back to them within 48 hours, too. So, or 2 business days. And the last one that on this page is clients can also communicate. And actually, right now, we put larger stickers on each vehicle with the abutment number for the CTD. So actually, each rider that rides our system can do that now. But we also are going to do a closeout survey, which will be developed in the second quarter of 2017 as well, through our organizational and development department in PomTran. So we are also going to do that as well. Okay. So the second one was, the finding was, PowerTransit riders are often unsure of how to use the fixed route service. So the recommendation is develop an educational program that includes videos to better inform riders how to use fixed route bus service and promote the educational program by social media, CTC website, and on displays in the CTC waiting room. The status of that is implement functional assessment and travel training in the first quarter of 2018. We also are going to, Clint, if you want to expand on this, but we're also going to be hiring a public relations person for PomTran, who I think part of that is going to be travel training. So we're going to bring back that function where we used to have an outreach manager that did that travel training. Now, for those that don't know what a functional assessment is, functional assessment, right now for our eligibility application, we have a medical form where they fill it out. Functional assessment takes it to a next step. We actually assess their ability to use the fixed route. So essentially an ADA eligible paratransit rider cannot access the fixed route bus due to their disability. So we would take it another level and do the functional assessment. And then from that functional assessment, we want to offer them an alternative, which would be travel training. So we're looking at first quarter of 2018 for that. For local standards, the recommendation was increasing public transit ridership. The goal is 25% and on-time performance goal of 95%. The status of those is the goal is to increase ridership on fixed route service. We actually feel as though with the ADA card that we've created, now that the ADA users can use the fixed route, we've actually increased our ridership on the fixed route probably by 25% or even more. So we'll look into that for this new CTC review. We feel as though we've met that goal. On-time performance goal. The new on-time performance definition is a little bit different. Pickup window goal is 93%, and the drop-off window goal is 95%. So we've changed the on-time performance definition. Does anyone have any questions
about that? I would like Chad to expand on that just a little, because this is very important. And this follows the investigation by the OIG and our action plan as a result of it. So Chad, you want to expand on the methodology and essentially the industry standard with respect to on-time performance for paratransit service?
Sure. The new metric, or the metric that we're using, is we're tracking both pickup and drop-off on-time performance separately, and we're reporting them. The on-time performance goal for pickup is 15 minutes. It's a 15-minute window prior to the scheduled pickup time. So 15 minutes before, 15 minutes after, we're considered on time. The drop-off on-time window goal is that we arrive no later than the time requested to be at the pick, at the drop-off. So if they have a doctor's appointment at 9 a.m., if we arrive at 9:01, we're late. As long as we're before that, we're on time. And so the new definition for pickup window, like I had stated, if you have an 8 o'clock appointment, we can show up as early as 7:45 and as late as 8:15. So it gives us that buffer, and we're tracking that. How it was reported before is they took the drop-off on-time performance and the pickup on-time performance, and they created an average, and they provided one number for the system. Now we're tracking both separately.
Yeah, and so that blended average artificially inflated the on-time performance that we were reporting somewhere at that time around 94-95%. Because we were doing very well with, was it drop-off?
Drop-offs, yes.
And so drop-off was over 90%, and when you blend that with pickup, it sort of artificially played. It wasn't showing the true picture. Now, while we're reporting both pickup and drop-off separately, the industry standard is to report the pickup. So we'll be reporting the pickup, but we'll have both.
We'll have both.
For, Yeah,
Mr. Nagelberg?
When you speak of drop-off, why do you separate the one where they're going to the place, the appointment, and the return, or you refer only to the drop-off to the place they're going? Because there seems to be no, known to me anyway, any drop-off time when you're returning from where you were.
That's correct. It's all in how you schedule the trip. So if you are scheduling by an appointment time, a requested appointment time, then it's a drop-off on-time performance. If you're on a return and you're just going home and you're not saying that you have to be home by 3 o'clock and you didn't set that appointment up, it's then considered as a pickup window.
So it's up to the consumer to say they have to be home by such and such a time.
Yes, like you want to schedule by appointment. I want to be home no later than 3 p.m. or I want to be home when you're making the reservation.
Right, no, because very often what happens on a return trip, you can be out there floating all over the place and take hours to do a trip that can be done in 1 hour, for example, and no one seems to be concerned because you're not going to an essential time.
No,
there's a question as to that.
There's two ways to schedule your trip. You can ask for an appointment time, I need to be somewhere at a certain time, or a pickup time. Normally, when someone's booking a trip, they say on their origin or from home, they say, I want to be at Walgreens by 10 o'clock, or I want to be at my doctor's by 11 o'clock. And then they say, I want to be picked up by 2 o'clock. So if someone says, I want to be picked up at 2 o'clock, but I have to be home by 3 because I have we have to meet a caregiver or something like that, we accommodate that. But most people don't have an appointment time going home.
Correct.
So we do that as the pickup from the destination.
Also, I'll get to you in a second, the PalmTran Service Board also on a monthly basis receives the performance report card from PalmTran, and this is one of those criteria that PalmTran Service Board is watching and measuring. So this is being seen at different levels again, and so there is certainly attention being paid to this criteria and to this metric to make sure that it's a valid metric and that it's improving. I'll go to you, Mr. Fentis.
The increasing the public ridership by 25% seems to be very aggressive and commendable. How are you going to do it? Is it through publicity or duplication of counts? Or
how
are we going to do this?
It actually used to be 10%, and the TD Commission actually asked us to raise it because of our TD Bus Pass program and how we move people over to the fixed route. By before it was an ADA card with a discounted $1 rate. Now it's a free ADA card. So they actually recommended the 25%. To say, let's see if you can do this. And we were reporting the amount of boardings that the ADA card was on a daily basis, and that the amount on the ADA card was getting close to the amount of trips we were doing each day in the week.
There's no penalty if you don't receive 25%. So it's going to be part of a marketing program?
Yeah, and I just want to ask a question just to be sure. The time period to achieve that is 25%?
It's the fiscal year, but we set that goal ourselves.
Right.
So in the next minor update in the TDSP, we can look at that and see if that's a goal that we want, or we can change that goal if we want.
Yeah, so it's a stretch goal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. We're not going to make that. I mean, it's a stretch goal, and I'm fine with it being 25%. I can't tell you that nationwide that ridership is down. We're going to work hard with marketing and making sure our services are on time, it's convenient, to push our ridership up, because those are our customers, and any business wants to add additional customers and additional trips. And so that's what we're trying to do, add more customers to our business. And that's how I look at them. I don't look at them as riders or boarders.
Well, once again, I think that it's great, but the, if we evolve, I'm sorry, if we contact the locations that we have ridership to, like the Publix's, you know, advertise or something like that. But I was just thinking that because it's so aggressive to say 25%, I would like to say that our goal is 25%, but we, you know, 15 or 20 is acceptable, because otherwise, if we don't meet that goal, then people say, well, look, you know, you didn't meet the 25% goal. Why did you even set it if you didn't know what you were going to do?
Is it realistic?
And so, like, maybe we, but on the other side, I'm not sure if we have monies that are allocated, that if you don't meet that goal, then you get a reduction in dollars.
Well, actually, let me clarify it. This goal is actually tied to the comparable paratransit trips. So those that are eligible for paratransit, you want to transfer them over to fixed route, so public transit. So it's not we want to increase 25% of fixed route. It's we want to take whoever is eligible for Palmtrain connection and get them to use the public transit.
And to your
so point. Those that are TD eligible, we give them a bus pass if they're within the ADA core area so that they can use the fixed route. For those that are paratransit eligible, like Mr. Evans or Mr. Nagelberg, they might choose to take the paratransit trip here, or Mr. Rupart, and then hop on the fixed route bus. That would be counted as us moving someone from a paratransit trip to a fixed route trip. Again, this was something from the CTC review, so we didn't get in detail as to what everything meant, because we thought everybody, you know, who was participated in the CTC review as the LCB knew what that meant. But that is actually tied to us moving the paratransit eligible folks to any form of public transit, also tri-rail.
And then to your comments, as gasoline has gotten cheaper, the ridership has diminished. So, you know, on a global basis, I think Mr. Forbes would tell you that they're fighting hard to try and make a more efficient system that's going to be more to the liking of the riding public, that they can depend on more, that may have less stops or may, you know, meander less and be able to move more people quicker. And that's part of what's going on right now with the really a reevaluation of the entire system. I think Mr. Forbes would tell you himself that he's really looking at remaking this Palmtrain. And so there's really an aggressive push to try to make it more meeting what the riding public needs. He's also very aggressive in trying moving people out of the Paratran onto the fixed route. We just looked at the numbers before. You know, if you're spending $50 for, well, ambulatory, $30.81, you know, you can move a lot of people on fixed route for $30.81. So the more people that can find that to be an effective way of moving from point to point, that's going to make it them have, I mean, they have a fixed amount of money. And if they can use that money more effectively on the fixed route, then it, again, makes it more acceptable for people to give up the Paratran and go to fixed route. I also think that the Palmtrain is looking at other alternatives, maybe even beyond Paratran, but I don't want to go much beyond that. And there might be opportunities there besides, unless you want to address that, Mr. Forbes.
No, Mr. Chair, actually, I'd like to, I think your point is well taken. I was mistaken, because I actually thought from reading just how it's stated there, that this was fixed route, and a pure fixed route increase in ridership. So I would ask Mr. Chair and board members to make sure that we clarify in words exactly what our goal is, because it doesn't say that. And I think it actually needs to explicitly say moving paratransit riders, 25% of them, to the fixed route. And so I was mistaken. Mr. Chair, I also, on the ridership, you are correct. Globally and nationally, ridership is down. As you know, we are endeavoring in a route performance maximization project, RPM, as we affectionately call it. And it is a system-wide look at our bus network and a system-wide overhaul of our best bus network within the next year and a half, 2 years. And I will report to you in a recent article by the American Public Transportation Association, APTA, that it had the ridership reports on major cities and showed the decline. But the only cities that experienced an increase in ridership are those cities that did a route optimization of the entire bus network, including Houston Metro, the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, and I think there was one other. But, you know, so we're going in the right direction to really revamp our transit system.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Forbes. Any other comments? Yes, sir.
One of the things, and I do agree, we need to work on what are we defining as public transportation, because the other thing that I, as PalmTran, as the CTC, which is no longer just saying our fixed route and our paratransit service, this is overall looking at transportation within the county. We have the comments of our older adults continue to drive after they're no longer able to, you know, react, or individuals with disabilities. And one of the things that we're presented with as a huge opportunity within these last 2 years is the transportation network companies. That's our Ubers, our Lyfts that are coming. And I think that we have to really, when we do marketing, it's in PalmTran's best interest to market those options, because an individual might not be able to say, I'm ready to take the bus, or I'm ready to take PalmTran Connection. But if they start to see, wait, I can have Uber as an alternative, and then as they shift away and we take a look at our older adults, and you take a look and you can show them the math, because our older adults are very smart here. And if you can show them the math, how many rides do you take a month in your own car? How much you pay for gas, maintenance, owning that car? You know, what are the limitations that you only drive during the day? You can't drive at night. You can't drive when it's raining. And then they start to see, wait a second, it's actually, I have more freedom if I give up my car and I move to some of these options. And then in itself, that'll benefit PalmTran, because as we get people out of their own cars, now they're going to start using more resources that are out there. And then the other thing is, we're also wanting to look at our bottom line. And, you know, at $52 a trip, it actually serves us better that if they can shift over to one of these transportation network companies, a short trip costs $5. They're paying $3.50 on PalmTran Connection. I think there's a lot of older adults here that, though finances are always important, that extra $1.50, they might be willing to spend that for some of their trips instead of taking PalmTran Connection. And then again, reducing the strain that puts on our service. So when we're saying 25%, you know, what are we looking to do, and how we're going to, that might be a harder metric to judge, but I think that when we do our marketing, we need to keep that into account. And I also make that point for the TDSP, because I've noticed a change in the TDSP over the years. Originally, when we did it, it was much more encompassing. Over the last major update, it almost seems specifically designed for PalmTran, like that PalmTran is the solution for everything, and, you know, all the goals are targeted towards PalmTran. And I think that for the next major update, we need to get other agencies involved, FDOT involved, and see how are we going to make these TNCs even more legal. They're legal to operate here in Palm Beach County, but to get people feeling even more comfortable about actually using them, and then using them as a resource solution.
Thank you, Mr. Boyden. And again, I think that first mile, last mile is the real key in this. I think whatever we can do to get people to the fixed route so that they can get into the network it's going to be more cost effective, and it's going to bring more people onto the fixed route system. So I think, I think Mr. Forbes, as he said, everything they're doing right now is to enhance the system to try and draw people back. We have to be able to market something that's going to be cost effective and it's going to be efficient. And we can do that, and then people are going to use that system.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to belabor it because I know we're still in the presentation. But I am interested in this concept. I believe in a partnership, not to work against Uber and the transit and the technology companies, but as a partnership. And so I have a call next week with Brad Miller, who is the CEO of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority, PSTA. They have been somewhat successful in their pilot project, partnering with Uber for a 5-mile radius, and they've expanded that system wide. There are some nuances that I'd like to discuss with him, as I've read in their papers related to that partnership. But we are investigating it, and we're interested in that mode.
Would this require collective bargaining discussions, or are you able to work within the framework of the contract we have right now?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments on this subject? You want to finish up your presentation?
Sure. Then? Real quick, though, Andy, do you want to expand on this? With the major update of the TDSP, the TDSP also serves the human services plan. So I think we'll be doing a summit as well. We're going to be getting people to come in to talk about transportation, because that's part of the requirement of the human services plan to have a transportation summit to see what the important issues are in Palm Beach County. And I'm sure that will be discussed. Okay, so just in the future. So the rider survey part, one of the findings was drivers are unable to find destinations because of the system cannot accurately locate an address. As a result, riders are often picked up late or arrive late to their destination. Recommendation to improve, update the GPS system in vehicles so that these addresses are properly located. This status is constant communication with Trapeze has been set up, including site visits. Actually, we have a map update. We've already purchased the map. We have it in a testing mode right now on our Trapeze software. We found that this map has a lot more streets than our map now. Now, for those of you who don't know, the map that we have now is actually created by the county GIS, but we found that it doesn't have the function for the navigation that we want. So we are in the midst of updating that map right now, and we're very excited about it. And we're also going to be going to some different routing, which is street routing. So some really good things coming in probably the next quarter about that. Did you want to expand on that? Yeah, we are still in the process of testing it. We've sent a test vehicle out with the new map, and it works really well. We have some back-end scheduling issues that we have to handle before we're ready to roll that out to all the providers and all the MDT units. And then we are continually looking at the map upgrade to the back-end of Trapeze. So that's the map update for the MDTs is there and ready to go. The map upgrade for the back end of Trapeze and how we schedule is in our test environment, and we have a lot of cleanup that we have to do in order to make that live before we can go to actual street routing. But we are making headway on it, and as with technology, every time you think that you have it in the right way, you find that after you test it, you might need to make some changes. So Q1, I'm still hoping that maybe by the end of the month we'll be pushing out the new map update, and then by Q2 we'll have the street routing. So we're good.
But we have updated the MDTs since the survey, so that there has been improvement on the road, and drivers have said, and some of the riders who will tell you, we are finding more destinations than we did before. The other one from the rider survey was that riders follow the complaint procedure but do not receive a follow-up response from the CTC. Improve complaint department customer service and ensure clients receive a follow-up response as soon as possible. A closeout survey will be developed so that customers may rate their experience. This is actually from our organization development area, Charles Frazier and all that. I think they're also hiring some folks to help with the complaint process. And I know Mr. Forbes is very big on changing the way we do the complaint process, and I'm sure that's coming soon. So we're in the midst of doing that. Okay. Other than that, thank you very much.
Great discussion. Thank you. Any further comments? Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I really like the thing about maps, but is it a static map, or is this an active map that you could see on your cell phone or something like that?
It's a commercial map that was purchased, and it's like the map that you would see on your cell phone, like a Google map.
Okay, so what I'm really leaning towards is it would give me a great comfort factor if I knew that I was on XYZ Street and the bus was two blocks away and it's coming. So if that app says he's over here, he's coming, that is that the type of app it is? Or
The map is there, but then the application for our online pass web will have that for the passengers. So they're two separate things. The map is the map upgrade in the back end of Trapeze.
That's the static.
Yes. And then the pass web, which is the online reservation, scheduling, cancel my ride, that's in the testing phase too for all our riders. And what that will enable the riders to do is that when the bus is within their pickup window, when their scheduled pickup window is, they can log in and they can see the GPS of the vehicle and when it is due to arrive at their location.
And that's what we need to market.
That's
what I would say, like, man, my bus is here two blocks from here. Okay, I know I'm feeling better, blah, 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 kind of thing, versus saying, where the hell is it?
And so PassWeb is like a separate portion of what we're doing, a bunch of upgrades. And PassWeb, we were very close to moving it over to a focus group, and then we bought the new maps and we put them in, and some of the changes that Trapeze had made on the back end of PassWeb customizations that we had, we lost because they installed the new maps. So then we had to go back. So we were a little bit delayed on that. And where we are right now is we're going to be moving it out of the test environment, PassWeb, and moving it over to the live environment, and then getting a focus group of some riders to test it before I put the web address out and tell everybody this is how you do it. Because I want to make sure that we iron out all those bugs, because I don't want to release a product that doesn't work.
I'm not telling you what to do, but maybe one of the suggestions is that we use county facilities and DCF facilities to say, here we have a marketing plan that if you need to come to the community services department or health department or DCF, here are the buses, here's how it's working, and here's your ridership, because we have issues with people coming to the department because they don't know how either to get there or they don't know about this type of system. So it could go to some of our clients.
For connection or for fixed route? Is it both?
For both.
Both, yeah. And we do have an app for...
I mean, if someone says, hey, the bus stops in front of my building, that's also going to connect two other buildings or two other services, and we may be able to have...
Yeah.
But that we want more services.
Yeah, we have birth and death certificates at 800 Command Street, but you'd really be surprised how many people come in looking for DCF, Social Security, community services. It's a nightmare down there, especially with the new courthouse being built.
So use this as a model or a test model or something.
Yeah, through the chair, you're exactly right. We do have an app on Fixed Route that's called IGO, and myself and the senior leadership team, including Chad, went out into the field to ride Route 43. And what we learned from talking to the customer is, hey, do you know how to use our app? And the customer said, what app? And it wasn't just one, there were several. And then we looked at the bus stop sign, and the bus stop sign had the number to insert so that you get the information on next bus, but it didn't have the number that you're supposed to call on your, put in your text so that you can get that information.
Right.
So we found a lot of shortfalls with how we present this information. And not to say that a large number of our customers use it, because we have that data, but so many more customers could use it, because that app actually shows you Uber-like where the bus is as it approaches you. And almost every customer I talked to didn't know about it. And all of them had iPhones. Mm-hmm. So we have some work to do. We have Lou mentioned about a number of professionals we're bringing on board. One of the professionals is the senior marketing manager. That will be one of their tasks to make sure that we market well our services and our technology, because we haven't done that very well, as I anecdotally experienced out in the system.
Thank you, Mr. Forbes. Mm-hmm. Any more comments? All right, again, that was a terrific conversation. Let's move on to the Ann Storage Center.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Jason. I'm from the Ann Storage Center. Some of you recall from the last meeting, Jane Petrowski from Florida Department of Transportation made a presentation on the Section 5310 program mobility management, and we advise you that we'll be making quarterly updates to keep you abreast of the activities that have gone on so far. So this is our first presentation to you all. So it's myself and Corinne Ferguson, and what we're going to do is just go over a quick recap of what this program is. We're going to talk to you about our activity, some of the goals and performance measures that are in their infancy right now, and we're working with Florida Department of Transportation to finalize. All of you should have received a situational appraisal that we hope you're actively engaged in. We'll talk about next steps and then address any questions. So a quick recap. The Federal Transit Authority's definition of mobility management involves short-range planning, management activities, improving coordination amongst public transportation and other transportation service providers with the intent of expanding the availability of service. So our focus in this program is to improve mobility, increase access, expand capacity, support the CTCs and transit agencies in their missions.
And as Jason had mentioned earlier, these are some of the partners that we're working very closely with at this time, FDOT, Comtrans, and the MPO. And as we expand our effort, we'll continue to look at other stakeholders, key stakeholders in the community that will be helping us in this effort. And basically, those are the team members and people we have to be working with, the goals and performance measures that we're working on, and as you mentioned, again, the situational appraisal and our upcoming work plans that will make this whole thing come together.
So the first thing we did was establish the team. I know last time it was just me that was introduced. I wanted to introduce Corinne Ferguson. She recently joined Ann Storage Center. Corinne, if you want to say a couple words about yourself. I know some of you aren't familiar with Corinne.
Well, Thomas knows me from way back in the day when I was another name. But I was with St. Lucie County for 9 years prior to that with FDOT, 5 years. So I transitioned from the East and West Coast to Collier County, and then I come full circle back into Broward. So I think I like it down here better. I've been in the transportation world pretty much that time, and my background is in public administration, master's in public administration, and pursued a PhD in public administration. So I have a passion for transit.
So I'm Jason. I introduced myself last time as the Director of Grants and Projects with Ann Storage Center. I've since joined the mobility management team as a project manager. With Corinne's extensive experience working in transportation and my background in project management, FDOT thought that we could work together as a team and tackle the challenges that are presented in both Broward and Palm Beach. So we've talked about the partners. We've met with some partners so far, and Corinne has been very diligent at reaching out and informing people of what we're doing. This is a list of some of the people that we've spoken to so far. Again, this program is in its infancy, so we're just in that building phase. So goals and performance measures. We developed this in this mission statement at Ann Storage to identify what we're aiming to do based on the criteria that was set forth by Florida Department of Transportation and the definition of mobility management. So Mobility Management Facilitation Program at Ann Storage Center is focused on improving coordinated transportation systems for seniors, individuals with disabilities within Broward and Palm Beach counties.
Can I just ask you a question?
Please.
You're saying within Broward and Palm Beach. Are you making an effort to create a bridge between Broward and Palm Beach? I mean, this was one of the issues that
Absolutely.
I had brought up in a previous board meeting, that we seem to have a problem mm-hmm. moving people across county lines.
Yes. That has been brought to our attention. I know that there's an initiative, there's a fixed route system that goes from Broward up to FAU now, and that was a big step to get that coordination. One of the major priorities is to improve the coordination of the system. So as you mentioned earlier, everyone is looking at trying to get the MPOs together, which may be not the best idea, but there can be opportunities for coordination. And, you know, you all are focused on your mission here in Palm Beach. Broward is focused on Broward. So we'd like to act as the facilitators to help you find these opportunities and create better resources for people in transportation.
Right. I mean, I, and again, I know Tri-Rail is the you know, it's designed for tri-county mm-hmm. travel. But again, I think that there are people that Tri-Rail does not meet their needs because where the route is. And so anything that can be done to create a synergy between Palmtrend, Broward, and Miami-Dade so that people can, and I know that one of the problems, of course, is the fare system, mm-hmm. and I know Mr. Forbes addressed the PTSB on that, and they're working towards a coordinated effort, and that will, again, create a bridge that is important financially. And so anything we can do as part of the mission statement to create that homogeneous area in South County.
Absolutely. And when this program was identified, I mean, you saw earlier that our job is to support you and your goals. So if there's things that you see that are coming up that are a priority for your agencies and for the end users, we're here to help facilitate that. So we're happy to work with all of the agencies to ensure that it's a good coordinated system. So we reviewed the TDSP, and we looked at the different programs that Broward and Palm Beach are working on, and we tried to develop some preliminary goals to not recreate the wheel or duplicate efforts, but to support the agencies in their tasks. So we want to increase coordination amongst the community transportation coordinator stakeholders and other transportation providers. There is opportunities that exist for agencies such as Ann Stork Center that have an extensive fleet of vehicles. We have 22 vehicles that often sit. We met with Chad and Lou the other day, and we were talking about opportunities that exist there.
And also, to kind of add on to the other performance measures, especially when it comes to efficiency and effectiveness of our services, we're looking at our partners to see how we can make this work. So one of the things that with the situational appraisal, it will look at how effective the program is for individuals and how effective it is for the transit providers. We also want to increase utilization of the services. And I'll give you a little background about St. Lucie County. One of the things that they had, and I guess Thomas needs to kind of chime in because I usually call on him to give me some inside scoop. And we have various type of population in St. Lucie County, seniors and elderly and so forth. But the coordination was mostly on the transit provider. But they were also coordinating contractors that have their own buses, their own services. They're doing their own thing. And they support their own population. So we started to look at how can we bring them all into the same room? What do they all have in common? And what they did, they looked at creating what they called a transportation coordination network. Now some of the efforts that involve this basically come down to where is the money. So we started looking at dollars through the help of DOT at the time and to see how we can best serve the population needs. And as a result of that, there were certain things created. One after-hours service for individuals who are disabled. We need to go to work after hours when the public transit service was working. So those became new opportunities that we look at. And as we continue to look at that for Broward and Palm Beach, we're going to see what works and how we can make it better, as well as create new opportunities as we move forward.
Goal four, increase safe access to employment, healthcare, education, life-sustaining activities through transportation systems. I think this is very straightforward. We took a lot of this, again, from the different TDSPs and tried to mirror what you guys are doing instead of creating new goals that didn't. So right now we're in the process of creating performance measures. We've submitted this to the Florida Department of Transportation. We're meeting with them on March 30th to discuss and finalize. We've created an extensive list of milestones, output measures, secondary output measure, and performance measures that will meet and facilitate the goal of our mission. These are preliminary, so we're not really going to share them until they're finalized. That's why they're very small.
That's why it's so small.
That was intentional. So Bruno will talk a little bit about some of the transportation barriers that I'm sure we're all familiar with.
Yes, pretty much everyone in the room familiar with all the barriers that we are experiencing from the TD perspective, financial, geographical. The reporting requirement, yes, I remember the day when I have to basically bombard offices for my AOR report. So they knew me. I sat in their office and physically waited for it. And getting the cooperation of various agencies, interpreting the rules and the regulations from TD, a lot of the agencies that participate in the process sometimes don't understand the detail of what is required of them. So we created basically resource books and brought that into our different workshops so that would educate them how to better serve their population. And land use development, this is a big one for me, personally speaking, because a lot of development are being built today here in South Florida, and especially when they go west. They're gated communities. They're beautiful. They're not accessible. And as a result, we have to look at how can we best serve those individuals that are moving out to those areas and not able to access the things that they need in the community. So we have to look at the planning process. How can we best adapt a process that will help us to help the individuals that we're best serving? And jurisdictional boundaries, which was mentioned earlier, and that will be definitely something we look at.
So the overarching goal is for us to create or facilitate a more coordinated system. We want to have you help you guys provide more service for the same expense or the same level of service for a reduced expense. And then we feel like it would have been a successful program. So the meat of our presentation today is the situational appraisal, which is something that we hope you've all received and are looking at. This is a draft form. We've asked everyone here to provide comments and feedback. It is a very robust document. I think maybe we'll get away from survey and try and find a challenge, because that seemed like a really good idea. So we're looking at these different key stakeholders to help us ensure that we're not duplicating efforts and that we're getting valuable information for the different CTCs and MPOs. Once this is finalized and we're looking at getting those comments back before we make any movements on it, we do want to engage these different stakeholders to take the survey. This survey is more agency-driven. It's not an end-user survey. What we're trying to look at is the capacity and the challenges that are facing the different people that could potentially be a part of the coordinated system. We're going to be handing out paper copies. We're going to do the Survey Monkey. We're building a website right now so that they're going to have a fillable PDF on there that they can utilize, and we're going to send out notifications through our email client MailChimp. Really going to try and give everyone as much opportunity as possible to engage in this process, including focus groups and, you know, walking people through the survey to ensure that they understand the questions and we're getting valuable information. So I notice everyone in the room is thinking, how can I be more engaged?
Yeah,
I saw that. So we're hoping that you all provide some comments, whether it's right on point, or you guys need to look at this or change that. We've received some valuable feedback so far, and it has been very valuable. So we ask that you guys would engage, and then as well share with people who you think would be good contributors to this review process. Connect with us at any time if you have different ideas. We're always available. Let us know about these different initiatives. Sitting in the room and listening to the different projects that you guys are working on presently, it allows us to know how can we better support you. And then the pertinent information is here. So the preliminary survey, we're going to be launching on the 15th, and we're going to send that out to the different stakeholders and hope to get their feedback, because some of your comments might not be the same as the agencies. We really want to fine-tune this so that going forward we have the necessary information. From March 30th, at that point, when we meet with Florida Department of Transportation, we're going to start launching that full force and get all of the stakeholder engagement, and then we hope to present in July. I understand that's the last meeting of the fiscal year. It may be next fiscal before we start providing some of that information. Florida Department of Transportation is going to be qualifying the data and using a consultant to ensure that it's packaged properly and easy to digest.
I have a question for you.
Please.
How does this work with what's going on at PalmTran itself? And obviously, since our new director came on board, he's done a lot of evaluating, a lot of outreach to the community. And is this now redundant with that effort? Are these coordinated? I mean, how everybody is looking for solutions, yep, but are they all working together?
Well, we hope to be working together. Corinne and myself, we met with Lou and Chad the other day to start learning about their initiatives and figure out how this can be a supportive process. As I said, we don't want to recreate the real wheel. We don't want to be redundant. We don't want to have useless information. So we really want to work closely with the team to ensure that what we're doing is supporting their mission. If we're talking about first mile, last mile, it may be that this situational appraisal identifies different agencies that are willing to jump into the coordinated system and pick people up to get them to the fixed route and meet that goal of increasing the ridership on fixed route by 25%. We're discovering all those opportunities right now.
Okay, that's terrific.
Yeah. Just to add to what Jason just said, I'm glad you asked that question, and that's the pivotal part about doing this appraisal. Once the data is compiled and analyzed and the report is there, you have a foundation of information that is available for all different types of projects that are within the county, and that can be supported by the information that we receive from the court.
On the alternative, I'm sure that PalmTran has a lot of information that they would be willing to share with you
exactly.
rather than having to
reinvent it,
right?
Exactly.
So moving forward, these are the dates. On the 15th, we want to finalize the situational appraisal, then we'll send out the preliminary surveys. On March 30th, we're finalizing the work plan, and then at the next meeting, we hope to present to you with the work plan. We touched on this briefly, that we have been meeting with PalmTran Connection. They indicated to us some of their goals, the functional assessment options, and so we're trying to work with them to see if there's opportunities or support that we can offer as they go through that process. We're also reaching out to South Florida Commuter Services to see if there's any opportunities there to engage people from the rural portion and bring them into the urban so that it's not such a long trip. So we're in discovery mode for all of these types of things. So we'll present the findings from the situational appraisal. We know that goal number 7 from the TDSP is to have a summit. This is also a goal that's been communicated to us from Florida Department of Transportation. So again, working together and supporting them in that goal number 7 would be something that we're actively engaged in. The Mobility Management Circle. So thank you very much.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to advise the board that this is just a PSA. Tonight, the mayor of West Palm Beach will hold a West Palm Beach Commission's mobility study. That's tonight at 5:30 at City Hall. I plan to be there to put my comments on the record with respect to the work we're doing. And so I just wanted to, since we're talking about mobility, the mayor has commissioned a study and I think Alta Design is the awarded vendor, and the mayor has asked them to take a look at traffic along Okeechobee Boulevard, alternative routes into it and out of the city, for example, possibly extending Furnished Street over the railroad tracks to Australia, accessibility for pedestrians walking around downtown. And so, again, that takes place tonight at 5:30 at City Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Forbes.
One other thing here. And sometimes I wonder if maybe we missed the boat or whatever, and it's not to any fault here, but from the Department of Children and Families perspective, and I'll also maybe reach across the spectrum of others, service providers like the Department of Juvenile Justice, Department of Corrections, or whatever. For our purposes in Palm Beach County, we serve thousands of families a year through abuse and neglect, things of that nature. And the underlying factors with the families that we serve is poverty, substance misuse, alcohol misuse, behavioral health, mental health issues. And these families, in order to try to stabilize them, are required or it's recommended that they participate in various types of services. Again, too, when they start getting into these systems, the state of Florida has seen fit to tie the penalty of the loss of a driver's license to so many things. And I can assure you from the current position that I'm in now and my previous employment in law enforcement for 40 years in Florida, that once you put these people into this hole of losing a license, nobody stops driving. Even those visually impaired will drive for many years until something stops. And so the issue is people are just going to drive, and they continue to get caught not, driving without a license, and that's a stiffer penalty. And so what I'm leading to is we've got people that is costing us a lot of money from our Florida pays probably the least in the nation, but a lot of money for Florida here and the millions of dollars that is spent. And I know transportation has to make money too. It's just not a free ride for everyone. But we've got all of these requirements for people to attend various types of classes whether it be for parenting skills, whether it be for to address their mental health and substance misuse needs, and yet we can't, they cannot afford or cannot schedule themselves to those that are willing to work with the system to get to and from. And so it's just something that in your studies, think about them. I don't know where we're at. If you feel it's something that you're addressing, then thank you. If it's something that you haven't thought of or hasn't been brought to your attention, shame on me and people like me. But if there is a need, and if it's not too far down the road or in years to come, reach out to those or let us know to reach to you when it's time so that we can start talking about this and at least let you hear what some of the needs are, because in reality, there's probably that need for a free ride. Mm-hmm. To help us get these people, because otherwise, we're paying for it as a society, financially and emotionally. So it's just something to deal with that we struggle with the whole time. We are not getting people into the services they need to function as a successful family because transportation is one of those things in the way.
Okay.
Thank you for your comments. Yes.
And I was just going to piggyback off of what Clay was saying. Recently, the United Way released their 2017 ALICE report. And if you haven't seen it, you need to take a look at it because we're not any better off than we were in 2014. ALICE stands for Asset Limited Income Constraints. Poverty is an issue in Palm Beach County.
Thank you.
Dave? Well, you guys took all my thunder because I was going to say the same thing, but I would like to officially say I want to be involved in this, but I'd like to get a copy of the PowerPoint so that I can address each one of those things through our department, because we are covering human services, senior services, veterans, developmentally disabled, substance abuse, mental health, a lot of things that were just mentioned, especially poverty and all these other topics. So contact me.
We will.
We will.
Very good. David. Yes.
Oh, I guess just to make sure that the group's aware, the Ann Stork Center, thank you, FDOT, for have the foresight for having mobility managers. They put out several contracts. One went to the Ann Stork Center, so they're going to be taking Broward and Palm Beach County, and then the other went to Goodwill Industries, and so I'm working with Goodwill Industries now, but we're working in the rural areas, so Martin, St. Lucie, Indian River. But then I was also tasked with the Glades area. So I'll be working very closely with Corinne and Jason to work on some solutions for our Glades area here in Palm Beach County. And a lot of what the focus is, at least from my perspective, is that FDOT has had the 5310 vehicles, which has been a very popular program for nonprofits to be able to provide their own transportation to their own clients. And what that does is reduce the amount of Palmtran connection trips that needs to be taken. So if one agency has a lot of trips and they're all coming from and going to the same location, let that agency handle it. But what we've learned is that these agencies are maybe using the vehicles twice a day. So now you've got an expensive cutaway that's not being fully utilized. And so that's what we're going to be working with in terms of the coordination to see which nonprofits have vehicles. And then instead of just giving new vehicles to other new nonprofits that are starting next year, saying, wait, how can we work in conjunction with each other to utilize the existing vehicles to provide services not just for their own agency, but for the entire TD population? And with that, I'm going to kind of put a plug because I've been really one of the things I really think we need to look towards and we need to work with FDOT on is the operational funding. Previously, through 5310, agencies were able to get the operating funding. Now, I understand there's, a genuine, the ability to manage that is very difficult. So that's one of the things that I think we have to take on as mobility managers, is how can we take some of that pressure off of FDOT so that we can then rehab those operating funds put back into the system. Because a lot of the nonprofits, even if you give them a vehicle at 10 cents or 20 cents on the dollar, if they can't have the gas, maintenance, and the drivers, it doesn't work well for them. So I just want to make sure that in this public meeting we say we do need to work on that as a group.
And again, we're a very large county, largest east of the Mississippi, so it's not a single solution. There are a lot of very different decisions and a lot of solutions depending upon the part of the county we're looking at. And obviously, the Glades are different than Boca, which is different than Lake Worth, which is different than West Palm Beach, than Jupiter. So we're looking at all different areas, different urbanization versus rural, versus poverty, versus there's all sorts of dynamics here. So it begs that we have different solutions for different areas. Maria?
Yes, I just want to answer about the operating. It's a hard question right now with FTLC. We are still looking into it. As a matter of fact, yesterday I spent the whole morning in a meeting thinking about operating. One thing we really don't want is for the agencies to rely on us for the operating, because we want them to plan financially. We don't want to put anything out there that we're not going to be able to sustain in the future. So we want the agencies to understand, yes, it's easier for us to provide capital. We are looking into operating, but we want to back up those agencies not providing the upfront of it. Mm-hmm. Right now, we do have some issues, like you mentioned, with some agencies that, unfortunately, they have to return the vehicles because they cannot sustain it. That's exactly what we want to avoid. We don't want to give them the hope that we're going to sustain any programs or project when we don't really have the financial, you know, the financial means to do that with. So we are looking into operating, and we are thinking about ways to sustain those agencies, to support them, not forcibly offer them, giving them the funds. Probably we might attach like some kind of financial capital funding to their vehicles for probably, I would say, maintenance, mm-hmm. or we understand insurance.
That's a huge thing. We are looking into it.
We are looking into having a blanket insurance where those agencies can have their vehicles covered. We are looking into maintenance plan for them, like a blanket maintenance where they can have one place to have their vehicle maintenance. And, mm-hmm. But as far as giving funding for operating is still questionable with the NTOCs.
To the Jew. Mr. Evans, I'll get right to you in a second.
I want to say thank you because, you know, even like you said, the insurance, the agency doesn't need cash. What it does need to do is reduce the expenses. And so, like with insurance or any of those things, with if FDOT could help, that makes the biggest difference between an agency saying, yes, we can do this, especially when you look at like your Goodwills, your Volan centers that are doing huge amounts of trips and are saying, we can't do it without some financial assistance. But even with the maintenance and insurance, that would go a long way. Thank you.
Mr. Evans.
It seems to me, too, that we need someone, organization, an agency, somebody, to develop an independence questionnaire, because independence is learned. Somebody had to teach you how to tie your shoes and how to dress yourself and brush your teeth. Somebody had to teach you how to go get to the bus stop and how to use the bus. Those are all skills that can be learned. And, well, people coming into the system who don't have the prerequisite skills, we need to know that. And then by using some sort of a survey that we can give these people, we can find out where the shortcomings are and maybe perhaps offer them some training or help or advice. in correcting some of those shortcomings, knowing how to use the system, how to navigate around the county, what to do when something goes wrong and your ride doesn't show up. A lot of people don't know that stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Any more comments? Okay, very good. Thank you for your presentation. All right. Well, we're up to member comments. Does anybody have any more comments? I think we've really commented out tonight. Mr. Forbes, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Mr. Chair, I arrived a little late. I wanted to congratulate you on being selected as chair of this board by the MPO. They couldn't have made a better selection. Congratulations.
Well, thank you for saying that. Thank you very much, everybody. I think this was a great meeting. And we will meet again on Wednesday, June 14th, same time, same place. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.